Good afternoon, and please be seated. Okay, today is the time and place set for the hearing on this administrative docket number 210. This is a state bar request that we make mandatory the COA on addiction, substance abuse, addictive disorders, and mental health issues mandatory on an annual basis. We entered an order some time ago that didn't make it mandatory on an annual basis, but it was once every 3 years, I believe. And the bar is requesting that we amend that order or change the COA requirements to include 1 hour each year. With that, I'm going to turn it over to the state bar to come up and say a few remarks. I noticed Kim Farmer is in. I see Larry. Is that Larry in Carson City?
I am Larry Mack.
Can you hear us okay?
Okay. Thank you for the opportunity to present here this afternoon on behalf of the State Bar. The petition was filed, the supplemental petition was filed on February 2nd, 2016, and I think it fairly sets forth the position of the State Bar and the reason that we are now seeking the request of making it a 1 hour mandatory continuing legal education each year as opposed to 1 hour every 3 years. Since 1980, studies have shown a connection between the legal profession and higher rates of mental health issues and related addictive disorders. In February of this year, 2016, actually it was a short time after we had filed the present petition, a more definite study was released showing that attorneys display addiction levels of dependent drinking at 20.6% as compared to 11.8% of the generally highly educated workforce. It's a tremendous study, and I would like to comment on it today because I think it's very, very indicative of the issues that we believe exist and what we need to do in order to address these issues. We are a self-regulated profession, and if we don't, we being the state bar, if we do not take these issues on, no one else will. And we do it for a number of different reasons. Obviously, we do it to protect the public trust, the dignity of the profession. But I think equally as important, we do it to help our members and the membership of the bar. We all know that the legal environment is stressful. The burden of dealing with clients, billable hours, the adversarial nature of the profession, accordingly, then, it should surprise no one that stress can be produced, and stress in and of itself results in addictive disorders as coping mechanisms for attorneys, or perhaps in some cases exacerbates the pre-existing mental health conditions of those individuals. A couple of statistics that I think are telling since we last appeared before the court on this particular issue. As a self-regulating profession, I think we must keep in mind that the actions of one attorney obviously can taint the rest of the profession. We know that addictive behavior and mental health issues can relate to professional misconduct. For example, the state bar estimates that 33% of the disciplinary matters currently pending before the court involve attorneys with underlying abuse, addiction, or mental health disorders. 26% of all claims reimbursed by the Claimant Security Fund in the past decade were made on behalf of attorneys who just due to an underlying substance abuse, gambling addiction, or mental health issue. 26%. That translates into $447,378. 23% of all applicants, new applicants, screened for admission by the Character and Fitness Committee disclose a history of substance abuse. And I've commented on this before in a number of different forums before the court, indicating and at least advancing the opinion that I think there's a significant issue with our young attorneys coming into the practice. They were born, they were raised in a different culture at a different time. I think they bring some of those life experiences with them into the practice. And then on top of that, when you consider the workforce, the work environment for young attorneys today, it's very, very difficult for them to find employment. They come out of law school, some, not all, with, you know, in the neighborhood of maybe $175,000 of student debt on their back. They can't find a job. And I would venture to guess that if they had a substance abuse issue before they took the bar exam, they have that same issue after they have passed it. It doesn't magically disappear. And I mention that because this recent study, which I'll get to in a moment, made some very interesting findings on that particular issue dealing with younger lawyers. Since the court, this court adopted the amendment to Supreme Court Rule 210, which made CLE and addiction a mandatory subject of CLE, one credit every 3 years, the state bar has offered more than 15 CLE programs in abuse, addiction, and or mental disorders, health issues, and countless presentations have been made to law school students and other attorney groups. Since the court entered its prior order, the state bar has implemented the Nevada Lawyer Assistance Program to provide confidential clinical resources to attorneys and access to an initial evaluation at no cost. The Nevada Lawyer's Assistance Program works hand in hand with Lawyers Concerned for Lawyers. They run parallel courses, and just as a refresher, the Lawyers Concerned for Lawyers remains 100% voluntary, 100% confidential, while the Nevada Lawyers Assistance Program runs a different track, but the point being the outcome and the ultimate goal of both programs is to reach out, help our members, and more importantly, then protect the public trust. The State Bar has also appointed a NLAP coordinator, that's the Nevada Lawyers Assistance Program coordinator, who is also an attorney in recovery, to speak to attorney groups throughout the state regarding the services offered through NLAP in the Bar's longstanding Lawyers Concerned for Lawyers program. This information regarding the two programs has been made and disseminated through brochures, regular advertisements in the Nevada Lawyer magazine, and through social media. I'm happy to report back that based upon information that we have available, we gained the bar, the results of these efforts have been positive. Due to the confidential nature of NLAP and LCL programs, most information is reported to the back is reported back to the state bar in anecdotally. However, both program coordinators have shared information that they receive approximately 3 to 4 calls from attorneys or their colleagues after each CLE program or speaking engagement. Additionally, in the first year of NLAP's development, 17 attorneys have sought an evaluation for an addiction. to me, the telling number is the one that I'm going to be presenting next. Out of the 17, 7 of those were voluntary. They sought out the program on their own without being ordered there by the court, a disciplinary panel, or anyone else. So it's apparent that the information that we are sharing is reaching out, it's getting to the right people, it's being effective, it's positive. We are helping folks with the program that we have in place. I would like to mention the new study, which I believe really supports the need for the amendment which the state bar is seeking. This was a study that was released in February of 2016. Again, I believe it was a week or two after the state bar filed the current petition. The new study was conducted jointly by the American Bar Association Commission on Lawyer Assistance Programs and the Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation. 2 points of, I think, were significant that came out of the study. First, the study rejected the prevailing wisdom about substance abuse and mental health problems in the United States legal profession, and again, two key points. Number one, the levels of problem drinking and mental health issues in the legal profession appear to be higher than indicated by previous studies. And secondly, younger lawyers are the segment of the profession most at risk of substance abuse and mental health problems. Let me repeat that one more time. Younger lawyers and the segment of the profession are the segment of the profession most at risk of substance abuse and mental health problems. So what are we going to do? Let it go on and let it continue. We'll self-regulate, and if we don't do anything about it, who will? The study also indicated that 28% of the lawyers who responded experienced depression. 19% of those who responded experienced anxiety. 23% of those experience stress. And all of these rates that came out of the most recent study are higher than those reported in earlier studies. I'm looking through my notes here, if the court could bear with me for just a moment. The authors of this recent ABA study, which I referenced, it was a gentleman by the name of, last name is Grill, G-R-I-L-L. He's an attorney, and he worked in conjunction with a researcher from the Betty Ford Foundation, a gentleman by the name of Ryan Johnson, who's a research assistant. And he also worked in conjunction with Linda Albert, who is the manager of the Lawyer Assistance Program in the state of Wisconsin in Madison. And the study created an opportunity for the legal profession to turn the corner on some of these issues. Some possible changes, policy changes that were recommended by the authors in this recent study were as follows. Mandatory law school classes on the importance of maintaining well-being. Comprehensive mentoring programs. CLE requirements. Let lawyers take courses on substance abuse disorders and mental health issues. Adequate funding for bar-sponsored lawyer assistance programs. Cooperation with health groups to develop effective treatment. steps to help bar regulators and licensing agencies identify and deal with lawyers who have problems with alcohol or mental health issues. I found it very interesting that a lot of the things that were recommended in this February 2016 study were things that I can probably say we've already started here in the state of Nevada. I see nothing wrong with education. The request that the state bar is making does not create an additional burden on any practicing attorney in the state of Nevada in terms of the total number of CLE hours which that attorney must achieve each year in any event. We are only asking that one of the 12 hours that we have to earn each year be in the area of addiction and mental health. It's working. Lawyers are starting to get, I don't want to use the word educated, but they're starting to know and understand that there are people within the bar that are willing to help. This is not an issue of attorney discipline. It's nothing more than reaching out and helping those who need the help. And again, just looking back during the past year or so on what we've been able to accomplish as a bar by the simple implementation that started here with this court 2 or 3 years ago, I forget when the court entered the order, of 1 credit hour every 3 years, we're already starting to see positive results. But in order to get the work out and make this thing meaningful and effective and really do our job and really do our profession, because no one else is going to help us, is to get it done and take it on and see to it that we extend the help to our members who are reaching out and crying out to us in their own way for help, and then at the same time protecting the public trust that all attorneys have to deal with. That's our job. That's what we want to do. I'm going to quote from the study, if I may. And this was some comments that were made by Mr. Krill at a press conference. Apparently, this policy, this study came out at the ADA mid-year conference in San Diego. And I'm quoting, "This long overdue study clearly validates the widely held but undersupported view that our profession faces truly significant challenges related to attorney well-being. Any way you look at it, this data is very alarming and paints the picture of an unsustainable professional culture that's harming too many people. Attorney impairment poses risk to the struggling individuals themselves and to our communities, government, economy, and society. The stakes are too high for inaction." And again, I'm sure the court has not seen this study. If the court would like, we could supplement, the court could supplement its petition so that the court would have the study at its disposal if the court would feel appropriate to review it. It's the most recent study that we could find on the topic, and I think we're headed in the right direction. We've made some tremendous progress. I think we've seen it, and I would like to see it continue. The job is not yet completed. We are not yet where we need to be on this issue. So with that, I will conclude my comments. I don't know if the court has any questions for me, but I'll certainly try to answer anything that you may have.
All right. Thank you, President DeGesti. I think we do have a couple of questions for you. I know I've got one, but I know Justice Hardesty has one as well.
Yeah, Mr. DeGesti, I'm looking at Exhibit 8 to the rule.
And I wanted to pose a question to you about this issue, and then I'll explain why. First of all, I have three objections to the rule. I think that number two concerning credit hours should be 13, not 12. I also think that with regard to subsection D on page of the rule draft, that there should be no carryover hours for substance abuse, addictive disorders, or mental health issues. That should be a requirement every year. And my third objection is that no carryover hours from this source should be applied to other general ethics and general education requirements. And the reason for my concern is all related to the same issue. As you may recall, and I think this court may recall, the Continuing Legal Education Committee that we created to study the issues surrounding the Continuing Legal Education Board included three practitioners. Those three practitioners, as well as the representative from the CLE board and from the state bar, all expressed concern that we were degrading the professional competency requirements in CLE by reducing the credits that were expected. And in my view, we should not further degrade the continuing legal education requirements expected of a lawyer on the issues of trial practice, civil procedure, whatever it is, at the expense of recognizing something as significant as this. So my question, Mr. Digesti, is did the board debate, comment, discuss those approaches, or was one simply concerned that by increasing the number of credit hours from 12 to 13, that there would be a hue and a cry among the bar that the Board of Governors didn't want to face?
To answer the question, Your Honor, that was not a topic that was discussed by the Board of Governors before the ADKT was presented.
Larry, you need to talk into the microphones that are on the front of the podium there, because we're having difficulty hearing you.
Okay, I apologize, and I'll try to do better. Those three points that you raised were not discussed by the Board of Governors. I can speak here this afternoon on what my own opinion might be, but I, as you might expect, I would have to defer to the entire board for their opinion on the three areas that that you have mentioned. I do not disagree with the questions that you have raised. I think they're excellent, and I think they're right to the point. I personally do not see anything wrong with increasing the annual CLE requirement from 12 hours to 13. We do not know, we being the Board of Governors, do not know how the membership of the State Bar of Nevada would feel about that. And I suppose how they feel is something that can be taken into account, but I don't think that necessarily addresses the issue. I think we came to the court with 12 hours because we knew there was going to be some pushback, but we felt that it was important enough to get the 1 hour of continuing legal education each year and making it part of the 12, so that we were not increasing the burden either financially or by attending CLE on any of the members of the Nevada Bar. That was, quite frankly, I believe, the thought in the discussion that we had a couple of years ago when we brought the original ADKT to the court. I understand and recognize the court's concern. There's certainly nothing in this request by the Board of Governors that intends to take away or diminish the overall continuing legal education of members of the state bar. That's not intended to do that in any way. The carryover provision, Your Honor, again, I can speak for myself. I cannot speak for the bar because we have not vetted that particular issue. I can give you my own personal opinion, but I don't know that it would be appropriate to do that at this point. And I apologize. What was the third one, Your Honor?
Well, I think that you covered the point. My concern was that if there is any kind of carryover out of this segment, that it degrades or diminishes the ethics and general educational requirements because that's what it's to be applied to. So that was my objection.
Yeah, I don't think there should be any carryover on the substance abuse CO.
Well, I guess to finish one other point, to the extent that one is convinced or persuaded that the issue is as serious as it is and its pervasiveness around in the profession, requiring someone to be knowledgeable of the status and the evolving nature of substance abuse and addictive disorders and mental health issues every year is simply a recognition that it's a key component of the professional education requirements of this profession. So I don't know why one wouldn't insist upon it every year. We don't give full carryover credits for ethics, for example. You get no more than two, which kind of assumes that you'll have to at least take every other year your ethics requirements. We probably should make that every year, too, given the number of issues in front of the bar discipline in this court.
Your Honor, the way I read the old rule, perhaps I'm not reading it correctly, but I think under the old rule that you could not carry over any excess CLE that was earned within a three-year period as far as substance abuse is concerned. We're not seeking to change that portion of the rule on the carryover. We're only asking...
No, I get that, but I am suggesting that change, especially if you're going to have 1 hour every year.
That you... The carryover, yeah?
I would preclude the carryover for that subject, yes.
But the draft says that. The draft says no carry forward.
No.
It does. It says you cannot carry forward and satisfy the substance abuse, but you could carry it forward to satisfy ethics. And your point is you would accept the former, but you wouldn't let it satisfy ethics either.
That's correct, right. Well, ethics and general education requirements, I wouldn't think find it appropriate to apply to either.
I recall that there was some discussion whether an hour is the appropriate unit for this instruction. I didn't go back and reread everything, but that was part of what animated this as every 3 years, and the thought that people would get 3 hours at a time or something like that. Is 1 hour every year optimal for this education? What do studies show on that?
Sure, there's any data that we have available to show that 1 hour each year, what kind of result that produces. But I would just simply submit that 1 hour a year, in my opinion, is better than 1 hour every 3 years. It keeps, I think, this issue at the head of the line. I think it's something that's important, and I think it's something that we have to focus in each year instead of 1 hour every 3 years.
Okay.
And it was the
best. It was more than 1 hour in a session.
Correct.
That's right.
Larry, I have a question. I know we addressed this ADKT 478 in December of 2012. We issued the order January 10 of 2013. And it seems to be, my recollection anyway, was the reason that we kept it once every 3 years. There was a concern that it would become redundant and that I think you indicated in your petition, though, that's not the case. In your remarks today, indicated, unless I misunderstood, that you had 15 different programs available, and so that's really not a concern.
I don't know if it's a concern. From where I'm sitting, I do not see it as a concern. I think the fact is that when these classes are provided, there's been a positive response at every session. How many of those individuals that respond, I don't know if they're reaching out for help and if they in fact go forward to obtain the help. But sometimes, you know, attorneys aren't any different than anybody else. Sometimes you have to repeat the same thing more than one time before they get it. And
But are there different programs available, or is there one presentation that you give primarily?
I'm going to have to defer to someone that knows a little bit more about that than I do, but I believe that there are different programs that have been developed over the past 1 or 2 years so that the same program is not being provided each and every time we have a CLE type of class. And if that is a problem of redundancy, then okay, that's an issue. But we address that issue with the CLE providers and require them to provide a better range of CLE instruction. Now, we don't want to, you know, cut off our nose to spite our face. We're not going to solve the problem through the back door by only saying, well, we'll just do one credit hour every 3 years because we don't have enough different types of CLE classes that address the issue. The fact remains that when classes are held and conducted, we are receiving a positive benefit from it. So you don't solve that problem by, you know, trying to say, well, we only have one program that's a little bit redundant, and maybe we should look at the CLE programming itself and the classes to address that issue to make it a different educational platform than just having one class. It's just my opinion, Your Honor, and I don't mean to speak for the board on that because that's not anything, honestly, that we discussed. But that's an observation that I'm making.
I would like to comment on that, Chief, if I may.
Yes.
When we originally talked about substance abuse, we really didn't talk about opiate addiction. And if anything, opiate epidemic, we already have a response from our House of Representatives. They passed a number of bills to respond to the original, to the opiate epidemic during the week of May 9th, 2016. The bills deal with everything from limiting prescriptions sizes and improving treatment for pregnant and postpartum women and their babies and creating task force to make recommendations. A bill of interest to the state court community is H.R. 5046, the Comprehensive Opiate Abuse Reduction Act of 2016. This bill authorizes new grants to the state and local governments to respond to the epidemic. We never even talked about opioid addiction when we originally talked about this, but certainly lawyers will be participating. We've had, just in the last little bit of time, the wife of a senior judge died of opioid addiction. We had one of our judges die, our municipal court judge died of opioid addiction. And then we had Prince, a fine entertainer, die of opioid addiction. So I think that's important. When you talk about different programs, I was involved in alcohol rehabilitation, LCL, and then with Lisa and Kim and Christine, we developed the Lawyer's Assistance Program. A program on Lawyer's Assistance Program can be an hour. A program on LCL can be an hour. We also now in this state have medical marijuana. Senator Sanderbaum thinks we'll go from 5,000 medical marijuana cards to 50,000 medical marijuana cards. And to think that our 8,000 members of the bar that participate, or the 10,000, including the inactive members, will not be getting medical marijuana cards is quite a stretch. We'll be involved just like everybody else is. And then on the ballot this November, we have legalization of marijuana, and that may become an aspect too. At the summer, we had some information on what the aspects of medical marijuana and legalization of marijuana causes in Colorado, and I'm sure we'll have more information from Oregon and from Washington, from the District of Columbia, and so there's a lot of issues. I don't think there'll be any repeat type of redundancy. type programs. We've got a lot to do, and I'd like to congratulate President Digesti. You've been a real stalwart on this area, and I really appreciate it, considering you're a normie. You're not like the rest of us that are in recovery. And Lisa, you've done a great job with LAP, and Kim, you've always been a stalwart, and Christine, welcome aboard. And I know Mitch does a great job with LCL. And we lost a good one. We lost Cole Swob. And this guy was the father of LCL. Had a meeting in Reno for years and saved many, many lives. And then Ben Graham and I started it in 1986 in Clark County, and I think we've saved a few too. And the times I participated in substance abuse programs, people have come up to me afterwards and said they have a problem. And it's not only the lawyers, it's the lawyers' family. They need to be advised as to what happens. And the younger generation, though, you're absolutely right. The younger generation, I mean, I don't really think about sticking a needle in my arm for heaven as a man in the moon, but you can't say that about the young folks. Otherwise, we would not have an opiate epidemic in this country. And some, even during the presidential campaign, we've heard about, like in New Hampshire, of all places, there's a problem. And if there's a problem in New Hampshire, I guarantee it'll be here in Nevada, too, both north and south. So I think that Jim Hardesty's ideas are fabulous. I back him 100%. I hope the state bar does too. And I hope we do go to the once a year CLE on substance abuse, mental health issues. This is an abuse, and this opiate epidemic is just killing our people. It kills them. And it's just so sad to lose the people that we lose. So more power to you, Larry. And Jim, thank you for those suggestions. I think they're great.
I have a question, Larry. We're getting feedback here. Is it fixed? On the TIPS program, is there a substance abuse component for the lawyers who are not subject to CLE? I'm getting nods from the audience, so that answers my question, because the emphasis on young people makes me think that we should be sure to include that in that program as well.
And I, just as a practical matter, and I may have this addressed to my colleagues, understanding, Larry, that you were speaking on behalf of yourself as opposed to the board on several of these issues and these very significant issues that Justice Hardesty had concerns with, does that mean we have to re-notice the ADKT? To include that aspect, if we make changes to SCR 10, consistent with Justice Hardesty's recommendations?
Chief, I don't necessarily think so, but I do think that it would be appropriate to ask the bar to submit a supplement to their petition to comment on those suggestions.
I
do so forthwith. I don't know when the bar next meeting.
Supplemental petition, you know, that you also
state bar annual meeting, so that's just around the corner. So perhaps they can take up this issue and give us their insight as to anything we might be missing. It's their proposal, and it's being tinkered with, so we're going to find out if they have a problem.
Your Honor, if I may, we would be happy to supplement our petition with whatever the court requires in order to reach a decision in this case. We might be able to do it in one of two ways. We do have an annual convention coming up in a couple of weeks. As a possible alternative, we could convene a telephone conference with the governors prior to the annual meeting at the end of the month. I know Kim is in attendance, and No, I have not spoken to her about this possibility, but I would defer to her to see if that would be possible to get some type of discussion and approval from the board on the points, Your Honor, that you have commented on. My next question is, would the court also like, it by way of a supplemental petition, would the court like to see a copy of the study that I had mentioned earlier on in the comments?
Larry, I think it would be helpful for us to have a copy of the study, but I think the most important thing is to get the petition supplemented How you do that is your concern. If you want to, if it's possible and it's feasible to do a telephone conference with the board prior to the July meeting, fine. I think you want this out sooner than later. I'll guarantee you as soon as we get a supplemented petition, I'll put it on whatever agenda we can put it on to as soon as we get it.
Thank you. We'll get to work on it right away.
Okay, colleagues, any other questions, any other comments, colleagues? Well, did the bar discuss the effective date if the court was to approve this as to the commencement? Perhaps you should discuss that or suggest it, Mr. DeGesti. Are you suggesting July 1 or are you suggesting January 1?
Again, Your Honor, we have to defer until we have an opportunity, or I have an opportunity to discuss that with the full board.
Okay.
And if I may, I would like to thank Justice Cherry for his observations about the opiates and the issue that we have. And I'm sure the court is fully aware of the recent indictment here in Northern Nevada on that very issue. And I think, Justice Cherry, you hit the nail on the head. It's a great big problem, perhaps a lot greater than any of us would ever imagine. And the only thing I could say is I do not believe in my own mind that attorneys and members of the state bar are immune from that type of addiction. So I think it's important now, in light of the landscape in this area, that we take an extra step to educate our members. I do believe that the problem is now, and the problem is ours, and the problem is ours to fix. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. DeGesti. Is there anybody else in Carson City that would like to make a comment? Okay, I don't see anybody else in Carson City. In Las Vegas, is there anyone that would like to make a comment? Okay, please come on.
Afternoon. Christine Kazemka. I want to give some personal color to what we're asking the amendment for. Last night I saw a program on 60 Minutes, and the new appointee heading up issues with substance abuse talked about the old model being helping people when they hit bottom. And what education and awareness does is it helps people on the elevator maybe get off on the fifth floor as opposed to going all the way down to the boiler room. And that's what we're doing. I've seen it in the past 3 years since we've implemented the one credit every 3 years. And in response to the question about diversity of presentations, we do things with a hybrid model where we have a couple people from the legal community who are in recovery give their personal story, which kind of humanizes the issue. And then we address the issue of it being a disease versus a morality issue. We use doctors like Dr. Levy or Dr. Pohl. Dr. Pohl will come in and talk about the physiological aspects of addiction, and invariably when he starts, he asks people, how many of you think that addiction is a disease? And maybe a quarter of the room raises their hand. The other three quarters think it's a question of willpower, whether it's gambling, internet use, alcohol, drugs, fill in the blank. And so we have that, and then we may just meet with a group like Mitch Kobiega and I did last month at the DA's office. There was about 80 deputies in attendance and some staff. And Mitch talked about LCR, I talked about NLAMP, and we both gave our own personal stories of recovery. And at the end, there was a deputy, a chief deputy, who's been there over 30 years. And he got up, and he addressed the younger deputies, and he said, you know, don't do what I did. I've lost a couple colleagues because I didn't say something. And so if you see someone who's got an issue, take the risk of losing the friendship and reach out to them, reach out anonymously. We're losing too many people, whether it's through suicide or accidental overdose or to prison, dipping into their trust account. I think that's pretty much what I wanted to cover. Oh, Mitch Cobiega would have been here this afternoon, but he's got some health issues. So I called him before I came, and I said, is there anything you want me to say? And he said, yeah, it's really working. And I said, well, anything further? And he said, yes. If we implement the requirement to once every year, we will triple the number of successes that we've experienced by having it once every 3 years. So that's it, unless anyone has any questions.
Any questions, colleagues? Well, we certainly appreciate your remarks, and thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Anybody else in Las Vegas here to speak? All right, then, with that, we look forward to receiving your supplement as soon as you can get it to us. We'll take action on it swiftly. And again, thank you for your comments today. And this hearing is adjourned and the court is standing in recess until 9:30 in the morning.